From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
In the aftermath of the surprise announcement by President Donald Trump that the U.S. would be pulling all of its troops out of Syria, the U.N. Security Council heard from its special envoy for Syria, Staffan de Mistura, about his efforts to form what he called a credible, balanced, and inclusive committee to draft a new constitution for Syria before the end of the year. This followed a meeting by de Mistura with the foreign ministers of Iran, Russia, and Turkey. This is Staffan de Mistura briefing the U.N. Security Council on Thursday.
Mr. President, thank you for this opportunity to deliver my monthly briefing for the final time of this mandate. I am circulating this full written statement to you because, forgive me, for once it's a little bit longer, but there is a reason for that. I've served as special envoy for 4 years and 4 months, almost exactly the length of the First World War. The Syrian people have been enduring a conflict for 7.5 years. Longer than the Second World War. This conflict has been and remains a tragedy for the Syrian people. It has been dirty, brutal, horrific war. It has seen all the faultiness within Syria, the region, the world prevail so far rather than the will of the Syrian people. Syrian unity, regional stability, and international cooperation. No effort, not mine, not yours, not anyone else has been able to completely stop the logic of war prevailing. But we hope we are getting very close to that. In spite of several ceasefires and some moments of real hope, the battlefield has all too often prevailed over peace talks. And it has been constantly shifting. But ultimately, the question will be, and is, and now is the time to look at it even more so, will peace be won? We believe it should and it can. Will it be sustainable? We believe it can and it should. That is why a real political process is required. You, the Security Council, outlined in Resolution 2254 the elements for the political process. You exclusively mandated the UN to convene the parties, to facilitate the political process, to finalize participation with full respect of Syria's sovereignty, with respect of the ability of the Syrian people to choose their own representatives, with the purpose of enabling the Syrian people independently and democratically to determine their own future. And while stressing at the same time the vital parallel importance of a nationwide ceasefire. With this mandate, I believe we have made some difference, but not enough, we have to be frank. But we have made some difference, and you with us, and we with you. We have saved lives with some ceasefires and de-escalations, no matter how limited in scope and time, and they did save lives and stimulated humanitarian access to places where they were not getting it, but nowhere near what civilians desperately needed and asked for. We have convened the government and opposition and also helped the process of uniting the opposition, but we have not yet, and we have to admit it, had the parties really recognize each other as interlocutors with whom they must be doing business, actually negotiate, let alone reach agreements. We have elaborated with the parties key principles for a common future and settlement, but we have not yet turned these into real mechanisms for implementation. We have identified a clear agenda accepted by the parties that would facilitate negotiation, but we have not yet been able to tap into its potential. We have with determination promoted the involvement of Syrian women in the search for a peaceful settlement to the crisis. They know what the country is facing. They are more than half of the population, even though this is still constantly challenged. We have with equal determination promoted the meaningful inclusion and substantive participation of civil society. But this too is constantly challenged. We have nearly completed the work of putting in place a constitutional committee to draft a constitutional reform as a contribution to the political process. But there is still an extra mile to go. We know what is needed for a safe, calm, neutral environment in Syria and for UN-supervised elections to the highest international standards pursuant to a new reformed constitution. But we have not been able to begin the full work required to make that a reality. I deeply regret what has not been achieved, and I'm sorry more could have been done and was not possible. I think we in the Security Council together should share that regret too, and I know we do it. But we have identified and put in place some of the key building blocks on which the future process can build. My successor has all the skills and ability to work out what combination of continuity and change is required. He was my successor in Lebanon. He did better than me. He is a friend, someone we all respect, and we have tested, and you, many of you know. So I'm very confident about what I'm saying. But make no mistake, as with my own predecessors, and let me here pay respect, deep respect, to Kofi Annan and to Lakhdar Brahimi. As with my own predecessors and me, his success will depend on your unity and purpose to empower and support the UN and pressure all parties to begin real dialogue, negotiation and compromise to address the grievances of the Syrian people and implement Resolution 2254. Mr. President, following the passage of Resolution 2254, we did see serious attempt to put in place a ceasefire and cooperate in countering terrorism, which is and continues is and will be the priority of all of us because it's been threatening everyone in this room and beyond. And to support the Geneva talks on a political transition via the International Syria Support Group. But that promise has not been yet fulfilled. The unity here was not strong enough yet. And the forces which have been trying to complicate peacemaking have been proving sometimes stronger. By the start of 2017, Iran, Russia and Turkey committed to cooperate in Astana on the escalation and confidence building, with Jordan, the US, the Russian Federation beginning to work on the escalation in the southwest later in the year. The results were mixed. Lives, however, were saved. And there were three of the four de-escalation arrangements which did stand and then sadly came to an end. However, there were also lives lost. One of these areas was held and is still held in, and we are all supporting that arrangement, Idlib, with more than 3 million civilians. Meantime, results on detainees, abductees and missing people fell short of hopes. Despite the establishment of a working group in December, which is always better than nothing, and we have to recognize that, it did produce a first concrete but modest movement recently. It is, however, at least seeing from the point of view of the Syrian people, the thousands and thousands of families, it is unacceptable that tens of thousands languish in detention or remain unaccounted for amid fear, torture or death, or being not knowing where they are. So we have never had for any length of time the so-called nationwide ceasefire or the real confidence building that the Resolution 2254 envisaged along the side of Geneva political talks, but we got often close to it. Despite this, the UN-facilitated Geneva talks identified a clear agenda of four baskets, and you're very familiar with them, but we should record them because we don't want to lose that, which has been achieved. Four baskets of issues based on Resolution 2254. They did produce 12 living intra-Syrian essential principles developed with the extensive input of the government, the opposition, and with consultation with a wide cross-section of civil society and Syrian women. These principles, the 12 principles, are a brick on which my successor can work on. These principles offer a vision of the future of Syria that can be shared by all, and they provide carefully crafted formulas on key issues that in fact can be the basis for future work. For instance, sovereignty and unity, governance, democracy, separation of powers, human rights, religion and state, decentralization, measures against terrorism, respect for all Syrian components, and the full participation of women, the right of refugees to return to their homes and lands, and so on. Logically, a Syrian-owned and Syrian-led political process with UN facilitation must secure the actual realization in practice, not only in words, of this principle through agreements, mechanisms, and concrete steps guided by Resolution 2254. As was recognized at the presidential level between the United States and the Russian Federation in Da Nang in November 2017, a constitutional reform and a UN-supervised election in a safe, neutral environment opens the way to concretely implement Resolution 2254. And as indicated to you a year and a day ago, when I briefed you on 19 September 2017, the UN has identified via Basket 2 and 3 of the Geneva process 11 parameters, they are in my written copy that I will give you, for constitution making, and 6 insights on supervised UN elections. These were, in my own assessment, broad commonalities that could guide the parties and that would, in any case, guide the UN and my successor as a facilitator. Mr. President, by the end of 2017, Russia, Turkey, and Iran were preparing to convene a gathering of Syrians in Sochi. I attended Sochi at the guidance of the Secretary General. In light of the understanding that the Secretary General and myself reached in Vienna with the Russian Federation diplomats, as to how Sochi would make a contribution by enabling the UN to establish under its auspices in Geneva a key piece of architecture of the broader process that the realization of 2254 requires. The Sochi final statement, which the Russian Federation circulated in this chamber to this Council as an official document, affirmed the 12 principles as the basis for the political settlement. It called for a formation of a constitutional committee with the purpose of drafting of a constitutional reform as a contribution to the political settlement under the UN auspices in accordance with the Security Council Resolution 2254. I underline to you the word contribution. Thus, the Constitutional Committee can be a key building block of a real political process, an important entry point, if you will, but certainly not the only one. Syrians know that, you know that, I know that. It was agreed in Sochi that such a committee would be at least, very least, comprise government, opposition representatives in the intra-Syrian talks, Syrian experts, civil society, independents, tribal leaders, and women, and that care would be taken to ensure adequate representation of Syria's ethnic and religious components, and that final agreement, quote-unquote, is to be reached in the UN-led Geneva process on the mandate, terms of reference, powers, rules of procedure, and selection criteria for the composition of the Constitutional Committee. To this end, the Sochi final statement appealed, quote, to the UN Secretary General to assign the special envoy for Syria for the assistance of the Constitutional Committee work in Geneva, end of quote. Russia and the UN clearly understood that the special envoy facilitated that process and enjoyed the finalization prerogatives in the formation of a constitutional committee, and would have been able to identify members of that committee from a Sochi pool of candidates, as well draw on other people from outside this pool, if required, to ensure a credible and balanced committee. The UN facilitation of that process was the clear basis of moving forward. Mr. President, since Sochi, I've been, during the period of almost 1 year, undertaking a marathon of consultations with Syrian and international stakeholders, in particular the Sochi conveners, co-conveners, to enable the establishment of a Syrian-owned, Syrian-led, UN-facilitated, balanced, inclusive, and credible constitutional committee. I should not recount all the steps of the diplomacy, but let me reiterate the key points so that we know where we stand before I pass it on to my successor. One, the government and the opposition have conveyed 50 names each and agreed not to question the 50 names of the other. Two, it was accepted that there should be 50 names in the middle third, meeting the Sochi final statement criterion. Three, it was accepted that this would then, therefore, see a constitutional committee of 150. Five, it was accepted that a drafting body of maximum 45 would be identified with each 15 each from each third group. It was accepted that the conducive chairing decision-making arrangements needed to be clearly identified, and it was affirmed that the Constitutional Committee would be convened under UN auspices in Geneva. Next, the UN put forward 5 months ago a consolidated proposal or proposed middle third list based on credibility, balance, inclusivity, including aiming at the overall minimum of 30% women in the Constitutional Committee. The opposition did not like completely this list, but agreed not to question it in the spirit of moving forward. The government had strong objections to this list and indicated that it would work with the Sochi conveners on a different list and that the UN should await that input. Well, the leaders of France, Germany, Russia, and Turkey agreed in Istanbul on the 27th of October that the end of December should be a target, considering the circumstances, for establishing the Constitutional Committee. And the Secretary-General tasked me before moving on to verify whether it was possible to establish a credible, balanced, inclusive, Syrian-owned, Syrian-led, UN-facilitated constitutional committee to draft for popular approval a constitutional reform and to fundamentally advance that objective. To overcome the government's concern while not losing the opposition and maintaining the quality and legitimacy of the overall package, I indicated the UN would be receptive to modest, credible, balanced proposals while bearing in mind the UN's mandate and responsibility in the context of the need to finalize this package. It is, we understand, for the UN a big responsibility because it is to exercise its mandate and is expected not to accept any type of imposition regarding convening the SCC or finalizing the package. Well, in recent weeks, diplomacy beyond the UN Secretariat has intensified, leading to a meeting that I hosted in Geneva on Tuesday with the foreign ministers of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the Russian Federation, and the Republic of Turkey. And the Secretary-General was closely involved throughout. The three foreign ministers offered to the UN a significant joint input regarding the Constitutional Committee. That significant joint input comprised 50 names, drawing partly from my own suggestion and as their own proposal for the third middle list of the Constitutional Committee. The UN, having examined the UN Secretariat, the names, assessed that we would not feel totally comfortable yet in giving the UN stamp of legitimacy to all of the 50 names as meeting the necessary criteria of credibility and balance. Hence, our own suggestion, the need for going an extra mile. We have seen the loss of some experienced experts and of excellent credentials who would have also been natural bridge builders. So, no list, we know it, will be ever perfect. But in our assessment, the list needed a further review and some extra mile. There is also a need to identify with more precision the remainder of the package with the parties on board so that the Constituent Committee, when it meets, can effectively function, delivering outcomes in line with its own mandate as a genuine instrument within a larger political process towards sustainable peace. In this respect, my consultations leave me confident that it should be possible to agree on a 75% voting threshold and balanced co-chairmanship arrangement. And if I may add, regardless of who would be the chairperson, if one is from the government, the co-chair should be from at least the opposition and should be either one or the other a woman. They represent 51%, if not 55% of the population. My consultation leave me also confident that it is understood that the Constitutional Committee would draft a constitutional reform and the UN would have the crucial role in accompanying and facilitating this Syrian-owned process. It is also crucial to identify how the smaller drafting group or drafting body would be selected and begin to work. The party therefore need to buy in also these key details. So, let's be frank. I know we always look at the glass, how full, how empty. There has been and there is real progress. We nearly have a list. The rules of procedure become a little bit clearer, but we need to go that extra mile. If a constitutional committee is established, it would be done with the blessing, of course, of the Security Council. That why would have happened anyway and would have to happen anyway. And it would be vital for this council to support regular reviews of the progress of the committee's work and any adjustment required along the road in order to help the Syrian-owned, Syrian-led constitutional committee, according to the implementation of 2254. Mr. President, the UN alone has the legitimacy and mandate to bless, at least at the first stage, the constitutional committee given the circumstance Syria, and that is the Security Council. This is accompanied by parallel efforts to ensure a full ceasefire, see detainees and abductees released at a scale, build confidence, create a safe, calm, neutral environment with reforms of governance and lay the ground for UN-supervised elections, as per 2254. In this regard, and contrary to the spirit of building mutual confidence, we have been very concerned sometimes at recent and credible reports of some type of intimidation and coercion of people reportedly on the list for the Constitutional Committee and their family members inside Syria. This has been more frequent in the recent days, and we are frankly considering this very worrisome. This is a fundamental reminder, therefore, for the need of concrete steps on what we call safe, calm, and neutral environment. And that, Mr. President, will be one of the questions that refugees also and internal displaced people have been telling us in no uncertain terms. We want a safe, neutral environment. People will consider returning when they feel safe, if their fundamental rights are protected, if they can reunite with their families in the areas they came from, if their property and other legal rights are preserved and institutions of the state protect such rights, if basic social services will be delivered and there will be no political prejudice or bias. The list of legitimate questions don't end here, Mr. President. All these and other questions are key to the establishment of a calm, safe and neutral environment. Mr. President, if we are able to start a constitutional committee, it will be a new test of political will. Will the government engage seriously and show a willingness to address real grievances which have been at the beginning the origin of this horrible conflict? Will the opposition engage seriously, realistically, realizing that the process of change in Syria will not be an easy one, but it needs them to realize to be also pragmatic? I urge them both to do so. There is no other way out of this Syrian conflict. Let me commend the voices of the Syrians beyond the garden and the opposition, working for peace against all odds. Many participate in the civil society support room, which we have created in partnership with Syrians who committed to the values of peace. And indeed, many are meeting with my team this week in regional capitals. I therefore must urge you, members of this Council, the international community, and Syrian parties more broadly, to listen to their voices, even when I will not be there. They are important. Protect them and involve them meaningfully in the long and challenging road forward. I salute them, I mean the Syrian civilians, and thank them for their efforts, willingness to engage with us and with you all. Let me stress also the crucial role, once again, of women in the Syrian political process. This is not lip service. I've seen them. They had enormous influence, and they were given a chance, and they can be given more chance to do so. I've done everything I could to promote this with the delegation and within civil society. I've been assisted by a women's advisory board whose membership has recently rotated and been renewed. Advisory Women's Board is a model for what is possible when Syrians from different backgrounds come together to accompany the mediation process. And I can see this is also being now replicated on the Yemen file. The women in Syria have been continuing reminding me of what is possible and continue to plead for a process that is fully inclusive of all Syrian society with the full participation of women and everyone else. I fought and will continue to fight to ensure at least 30% representation of women in the Constitutional Committee, and I hope to see that realized. That's why the emphasis also in the co-chairmanship. Mr. President, you are the Security Council, so let me stress one point above all. The UN, as a facilitator and mediator, can create every sort of mediation process, every sort of dialogue, whether secret talks, back channels, proximity talks, technical talks, working groups, direct talks, multi-party talks, constitutional committees, national dialogues, and so on. I've sought to bridge international divides with ideas, messages, channels, meetings, and by framing a way forward that all could sign on to consistently support our mandate. I've also sought to speak publicly and clearly about the shocking violence and abuses against civilians, the need for humanitarian access, and the need to counter terrorism, and the fundamental importance of respecting international humanitarian law. But that is no substitute for genuine efforts of influential countries to talk to each other and to work constructively within this Council and beyond in support of a UN process and a Syrian-led and owned process. It is this Council, and this Council alone, that is responsible for the maintenance of international peace and security. You have mandated the UN to facilitate the intra-Syrian political process for implementation of Resolution 2254. That is the only way to enable the Syrians to determine their own future. And we need a renewed sense of common purpose and concerted action in this Council if 2019 is to be the real turning point for Syria. In closing, Mr. President, I would like to thank our Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, for his trust, advice, and encouragement, and my own team, who over the last 4 years and a half have been working tirelessly to keep the talks process alive, moving forward, sometimes simply incrementally, but never giving up. I owe them enormously. I'm convinced that the UN staff tenacity and ingenuity can make a fundamental difference for Syria. And I wish my successor all the success in his vital work. It has been a real privilege, honor, to work with each one of you, members of this Council. And in spite of your own divisions, you have always had one line, and I've felt it constantly. You have been consistently supporting our complex mission, myself, and I want to thank you very warmly for that. Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.